extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
What's up? What's going on, everybody? Yes, you can hear. This is clearly not Andrew Wiebe's voice. It is not Matt Doyle's voice either. They are on vacation. It's me, Tom Bogert, getting the call up to fill in alongside my man, Kalen Carr. Kalen, who's been globetrotting and then went directly back into the studio last night, and I'm not entirely sure that he slept. Kalen Carr, how are we doing? How are you feeling after some pre-game push-ups and a lot of good content?
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty sore, actually. I woke up this morning, I was like, why am I sore from doing the studio show? And I was like, oh, wait, I was with Kevin and BWP doing push-ups, and televised push-ups, I think, are a different beast. So you've got to get the form right. I realized I've been cheating because the next day I woke up and I was like, oh, man, I'm struggling.
Restrictive in the high fashion that you guys wear on set. Like, the push-up, that's tough, man. That's impressive.
Thank you, man. But you were on the show as well, and Countdown as well. So I feel like the Kalen Tom takeover isn't just in the Golden Boot standings, man. We're taking this thing to Apple TV. Love it.
That's what I was going to say. Like, this is the Golden Boot champion takeover, and there has definitely been minimal updates because we are absolutely in the lead again. And every time that I talk to producer Anders, producer Maria about this, I just get the delay tactic. So, yeah, we'll do that. And now Anders is telling us in the chat, oh, that reminds me, I forgot to update it. When in reality, like, we both know, Kalen, we don't need them to tell us.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Good job on the
draft. Yeah, thank you. I got to tell you, there's been a lot of change in my life recently. Me and David Goss started our podcast, Soccerwise, which you should go subscribe and check out. And I started a new writing gig today, launching a new MLS vertical at Give Me Sport. But I got to say, Kalen, looking at you sitting here, talking to you on Extra Time again, this is the warm blanket of familiarity that I need. This just makes me feel good and feel happy amid a lot of change.
Dude, Soccerwise, man, in the building. Congratulations on that. and the big moves you're making, man. I am so happy to see it. Been tracking, of course, Goss. The group chat lives on no matter what, but yeah, with the big moves, I'm watching, listening to Soccerwise every week. So I think more MLS coverage, the fact that more people are investing is a positive. And you know, just take me with you wherever you go, man. I want a piece of that signing bonus.
Come on, man. That was part of the Golden Boot draft contract. Anyway, to get into Major League Soccer, it's been super busy. I know that we haven't had a show since before last week, before the 4th of July. There was a full match week Wednesday, Thursday of last week. Then we had the weekend here. We got a lot to go into, but let's start with the best thing we saw from this weekend. And for me, it was the Lucho Acosta goal in FC Cincinnati's domination of Inter Miami, winning 6-1 in their last 14 games. Cincinnati has won 12 of those games. Lucho Acosta has a ridiculous 8 goals and 13 assists.
Yeah, I mean, I was just ridiculous. It felt like this was one that they had circled as well. I did their match midweek with at DC, and I just had this feeling that, you know, going against Inter Miami, of course, is always going to be a match that you circle for any team in the league. But I think Cincinnati often gets every team's best match, and that's difficult, you know. But then the table got switched a little bit where they're saying, okay, no Messi, no Suarez, Alba was out as well. So I felt like this was one where they were like, all right, we're going to come out and try to make a statement. And the 6 goals, it was just they were relentless. They didn't slow down. It showed, I think, the diversity of their attack. Orejano on the right is a nice wrinkle that Pat Noonan played. I saw that the last few matches, but this time it was almost as like dual tens with him and Lucho a little further up the field. And then, you know, just even the way he's able to, he gets faster with the ball at his feet, which is rare to see. There's a lot of guys, I was trying to think of guys I played with that maybe weren't just burners with runs in behind. I was thinking of like a Justin Mapp or guys, but just kind of glide and get quicker with the ball. And Orejano is that way for me. But once again, Lucho, just ridiculous in the box on that goal where he just turns Christophe and Busquets, which I feel like when Cincinnati saw that team sheet and they saw Busquets at center back, they were like, all right, we're going to have a good day. Cause that mobile front three with Yaya Kubo in the front, just that activity that they have with those center backs, that was always going to be a problem. I think they, you know, obviously they made them pay.
Yeah, so Lucho, in total this season, 10 goals and 17 assists in 22 matches, 1,900 minutes, 27 goal contributions in 1,900 minutes. The reigning MLS MVP is probably in the front seat for winning it again. We'll get to that in a little bit. But again, for this 6-1 win, we already talked about, it's a statement. It was something they were definitely circling. It was something that after the game, they didn't, you know, triple down on too much because they didn't kind of want to really poke the bear because these two teams play each other again before the end of the season. But for you, Kaelin, no Messi, no Suarez, obviously. Miami have been in this run without their two of their star players. Is it as simple as no Messi, no Suarez, chalk it up to the game, let's move on, this happens in a long season? Or is there something, I guess, deeper that you would be worried about for Miami?
No, it is that simple. No Messi, no Suarez, no Busquets. I mean, excuse me, no Alba, and then Busquets playing out of position. Aviles, I would imagine, coming back would make a big difference. Mm-hmm. He's on the bench, rested, I think, rotated. And credit to Miami. I think they've done way better than most would expect. Sometimes we say, what happens without these guys at Copa America? This was going to be a time where maybe this whole team is going to take a huge dip. And, you know, six hurts, no doubt about it. I'm sure they're going to remember that. You mentioned them mm-hmm. playing after Leagues Cup. I think that was one of them where Cincinnati just kept going and going and going, and then afterwards they're like, oh wait, did we go a little hard here? Like, and they even asked on wrap up, they asked Lucho, you know, are you the best player in MLS? And he, you know, he was very deferential to the other Argentine number 10, which I think is genuine, of course, but I mm-hmm. think overall that is something that a team would not forget. And I'm sure when Miami comes back around, that makes that matchup even more tasty moving forward. But that's kind of also why I like this Cincinnati team, is because they don't take matches where they rotate, where they rest guys, like, and they just push every single match, Lucho kind of being the spearhead of all of that. Mm. And that's why I have them for the Supporter Shield, have had them for a while, and also why I have Lucho as back-to-back MVPs. I don't think it's too early to talk about that at this point, just because it's never been done before in MLS history. And I just think what we're seeing from him, even compared to his MVP season last year, he's already doing better. I think 27 goal contributions already, yep. A chance to break the all-time assist record. I think he's on pace for that. Pibe Carlos Valderrama, I think, had 26. So the idea that we could be witnessing history for me is incredible. And like I said it on wrap-up, there's no more helpless feeling than seeing Lucho Acosta in the box with the ball at his feet and with some motion moving around him, and you're having to change direction and try to track him. He can kind of just pick when the play ends and how he wants to kill you. And we saw that in this game.
Yeah. Real quick on my last kind of thought on Miami here. Again, Busquets got a red card for dissent on arguing the same call, two yellows in a row. So that, again, was another part of this. But again, that's not why they lost, because the game was already kind of getting out of hand, or was out of hand. I believe it was 5-1 when he got sent off. But for me, like, if you just, again, this is disappointing. It's worth criticizing. They looked like they shouldn't be on the same pitch as this team. But the last time that they were without a couple of their star players, when Messi was out against the Red Bulls and they lost 4-0 at home, they played the Red Bulls again with Messi and everybody else, and they won. 6-1 was that game, 5-1, whatever it was. So I think that they would lean at that. And taking the macro view, that's 4 wins in 5 games without Messi and Suarez. Bite your hand off for that if you offer them that before this run of game started without these players at the Copa America. So I'm sure Inter Miami can really lean right back to that. But back to Cincy, what stuck out to me most from this game, again, best thing I saw was that Lucho Acosta goal. But the thing that sticks out in my mind from this game is that Lucho, he made the wrong decision when he could have had a cutback to, I believe it was Kubo, for a tap-in. And it was just insane. Like, it's sticking in my mind of, like, he just made the wrong decision. I feel like I don't see that ever. It's like, oh, yeah, he had a goal, several assists. He's got 27 goal contributions. Like, those should be the highlights. But my mind is like, wait a minute, he made the wrong decision. I don't see that ever. And so it's, like, sticking with me. So that's just a credit to Lucho Acosta's quality and consistently, and, as you said, relentlessness.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the other part of it, too, is it's just the rest of the group is... How many goal scorers were there in this game? I mean, Kubo... I'm trying to think who else got one. Oh, Valenzuela got a goal.
Yeah, I believe it was 6 different goal scorers, right?
Yeah. So that's a Buka. Yeah, Buka, he had 2 earlier in the week as well. Nice goal for him on the set piece that is definitely off the training ground. So, yeah, I think that is a piece. I mean, the one concern I have in my prediction for them to win the Supporter Shield is that back line and Miazga's injury, Haglin's injury, and then Miles Robinson going to Paris mm-hmm. with the Olympic team. So that is the one concern. But then I also think there's a chance in the transfer window, which we have the perfect person here to discuss. So can you help me, you know, I guess calm my fears down a little bit as far as, do you think they can cope with those absences and injuries? And do you think they're going to maybe add some pieces?
Yeah, so definitely their plan is to sign a designated player. And as you know, with the Weston McKennie kind of super ambitious attempt, like they're shooting for the moon here. They have a lot of money and ownership is stepping up for here. They believe that they can offer in terms of their training facilities, in terms of the current roster, in terms of development, that they are as attractive a situation as, you know, anybody, I guess, outside of the Los Angeles clubs or Miami, right? Like the air quote glamour cities. Yeah, since they are going to try to sign a DP, that means that they have to get Boupenza out. That obviously still hasn't been sorted. That needs to be sorted. And with Matt Miazga being placed on the season-ending injured list, they have essentially the salary cap of Max Tam to bring in a replacement in defense. And for me, I don't think that they're worried about, okay, we need to get somebody on an expiring deal so we don't have this problem in the offseason. I think you try to maximize this window, how good this team is. They're in the Shield race. Like, they're leading the Shield right now. That win last night took them into first place on points. They were already in first in points per game because they have a game in hand on Miami. But this is the team that's now top of the Supporters Shield, looking for that trophy. They will be one of the favorites going into the playoffs when we get there. I think that you just go try to sign the best player you can in defense and then worry about that problem in the winter and do whatever cap maneuvering you need to do in the winter. So, yeah, it's obvious that they're going to be looking to add a center back. And for me, I would just go ahead and try to find the best player with that Max Tam deal.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because Miles Robinson is on a 1+1, right? So there's a chance he could potentially go to Europe. I know Copa America didn't go the way he would have liked as far as his minutes. But, you know, Paris, big shop window, see how he does. Hopefully U.S. make a run. And then he comes in and comes back and is able to compete on the club level. But there's no guarantee. And I think that's partly a smart deal is like, and what I give Cincinnati credit for is they're not standing in his way at all. It is a surprise to me at first to say, this guy's gone already. You're already missing Miazga. Haglin's down. Like, you get him back. Now he's playing more of a central role for this team right up that spine. And then you say, okay, well, good luck in Paris, man. Go live your dream. And it's wild, you know. But I think that's also a credit to them and their organization to let that happen, I guess. And then to say, okay, well, we can account for this. And that's probably part of the reason why he signs in the first place and why you might be able to have a conversation with somebody like Weston McKennie I don't know anything about that, but if you are looking to sign international players or players that want to feature for the national team, like I think that's a cool approach at least.
Yeah. And again, I was talking to people at Cincy about this because I was shocked that he was released for the Olympics. Part of that was, like, you look at Inter Miami, and I think that Inter Miami had every right to tell Diego Gomez, look, Copa America or Olympics, you can't do both. And I think that's a fair compromise for all of these teams. And Miles was already gone for the Copa America. And when you add in the context of this injury crisis in central defense for a team chasing trophies, I think that they would have had every right to say, look, this isn't good for us. But I was speaking to people at the club, and they were like, that was never a thought. We don't want to stand on our players. We want our players to represent the national team. We want them to do what they want. Like, and it goes back to that recruitment side of things, Kaylin. Like, that's part of the pitch. The state-of-the-art training facility, state-of-the-art stadium, that's part of the pitch. Like, all of this goes into what they want to keep building and what they want everybody to see what FC Cincinnati was. Again, like, it's worth reminding. 3 years ago, they were a joke. They were the laughingstock of MLS, 3 wooden spoons in a row, and for how quickly they've turned everything around, not just, well, obviously most importantly in points, but also in perception. Like, that's a credit to this club and everything they did. So that's kind of where this is at with the Shield race, with Cincy dominating Miami again. Again, they play August 24th in the return fixture. I can't wait for that, and hopefully there will be no injuries and everybody will be at as full strength as they can be. Moving on, Kaylin, what was the best thing you saw this match day?
I'm going to go with Gabriel Peck, his performance, but more specifically his Meg. And I think it was like the 40th minute or 41st minute of the match. And I went immediately. I was on wrap up last night, which was super fun. And I was like, hey, we got to get that in the highlight pack. And I was like, I don't care if this comes off or it doesn't really end up with like a shot on target or anything like that. I was like, you just got to put this one in. And I think I had maybe a little bit too much fun with it. But just like the way he was able to manipulate the ball, his first touch was just ridiculous off the, I think it was a little 1-2 he played with Pouche. And then he stops the ball, rolls it back to bring Padelford towards him, and then just puts it right through his legs as if he didn't exist and just came out the other side. And I was like, okay, yeah, this guy is different. I mean, obviously two goals, game winner late. Pouche, him and Pouche were fantastic. I wanted to see how the Galaxy were going to respond as well after losing El Tráfico. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I was like a tale of two halves. The first half just looked just uninspiring from the Galaxy. And for me, it was kind of like that first big litmus test where they met earlier in the year, but it just was like one of those where, you know, they've got new pieces and paint still in peck and maybe not quite at their best as of yet. And this was more like, okay, we're going to actually see these two teams square up. And you saw some of the bad Galaxy conceding from set pieces, the way they conceded, and then some of the better pieces as well, where Peck I thought was good. And you know, he's been better than Paintsill, who earlier on was, I think, mm-hmm. the one that was, you know, jumping off the page and playing on that right hand side. Now Peck moves over there, where I think he's a better fit. But yeah, I thought Ricky Pouche was better too, where the possession was actually with a purpose. It wasn't just meaningless touches. He comes to get right. the ball off, but then plays that penetrating ball in behind to Yamane, who now has 5 assists on the season, squares it across to Peck, who is get more goal dangerous, you know, getting him yes. on the move, receiving the ball and in the box. You know, those are two basically number nine finishes coming into the ball box like that from the wide area. So, man, if he can, he's scary because he's still, what, 22?
23.
So young. And I think it was going to take a little bit of time. Shout out to the Gauss theorem, but not this quick. And I thought it was going to be more Paintsill kind of pushing them forward while Peck was able to kind of learn and grow and get his minutes. And it's actually been the opposite, where Peck is now the one who's really taking on more, and the Galaxy looked better, which they needed, because if they want to keep up with this Shield race, I think they're in the conversation. That you have to take care of business. It looked like they had slipped a little bit in this match, and then it got the big big goal in the end.
Yeah, so LA Galaxy beat Minnesota United 2-1 at home. It was a short-ish handed Minnesota team, obviously with their international call-ups. Pukki did return off the bench despite being listed as out. I'm just pointing it out that was the official report. So we were not expecting to see Pukki, and he came in off the bench for 29 minutes. You look at the LA Galaxy team, what kind of struck me interesting from this game, and we'll get to Pouche, I think, in a second, but just this was probably the slowest back line or back six that they could have put on the field, you know, with Caceres and Yoshida, and then obviously not the, like, I know Julian Ade is an attacking left back, but still you could cover. And I thought Johnny Nelson did very well. I think that was a very shrewd signing by the Galaxy. But you look at that, and then Delgado and Fagundes is the second central midfielder rather than Cerillo and Delgado, or rather, you know, Brugman or Delgado, right? So I thought that was interesting. It was obvious that Minnesota United were going to do what LAFC did. All right, we'll just try to hit you on the counter. Bongi Hlongwane, Jong Sang-bin, like those players, I was a little bit worried that the Galaxy might get shredded in transition, and they didn't. They, again, held the ball. It was more possession with a purpose with Ricky Pouche. Now that Andrew Wiebe and Matt Doyle can't defend themselves, I took exception with some of the things they were saying about Ricky Pouche last week. I was going to call them nerds for talking about it so deep and saying things, just telling me everything that he isn't rather than everything that he is. That's what I want to focus on, Ricky Pouche, because he's one of the most singular players in this league, one of the most talented, one of the most joyful players to watch. I will say there is truth to what they said. Like, if I was talking to people who would know and have metrics and have data and analysis, and it's their jobs to optimize all of these things. Ricky Pouche defends less than Lionel Messi. A line that I got was like, if he could just be three quarters of Lucho Acosta off the ball. And Lucho Acosta did make strides under Pat Noonan than previous regime, but he's still not exactly the pillar of defensive work rate and high pressing, right? And even it's like, hey, can you just be two thirds of that? And so I'm curious to see if Ricky Pouche will add to that. Again, I'm calling Doyle and Wiebe nerds for talking about what he isn't rather than what he is. But still, like, this team, that makes him another level of dangerous going forward in this Shield race towards the playoffs, more importantly, in Leagues Cup and knockout tournaments like this, if Pooch is able to give just a little bit more.
Well, it sounds like Pooch is listening to everything. So you might not have to do it, Tom. He might call him a nerd themselves. But I think you're right as well. On the defensive side, I mean, he kind of cheats and jumps the lane on the goal they concede with Pookie end up getting the ball. And I can't remember who was coming across to try to chase it, but that back line, there's a huge gap between the midfield and the back line for the Galaxy. And that's a concern for me, is they don't really, I like Cerillo, but he's not like an elite number six. And so if you're not going to have, if you're not going to have Pooch contributing defensively, and then you have some aging, slower center backs who are afraid to step and leave space in behind, as you mentioned, going against some quicker attackers, then you're going to leave big spaces in the middle in between the lines like that. And we saw Pookie just kind of say, all right, well, I guess I'll just keep rolling, just keep going, and ends up just passing it in the net. So that is a concern as far as that balance goes. It's a term that I think we hear Greg Vanney say quite a lot, as far as finding that right balance and chemistry and mixture between the team. And, you know, I still think they're trying to figure that out, but it was Pooch who you could say was at least further up the pitch where you think he might not hurt you, but the fact that he cheats and jumps in front and then allows that turn there puts them in a really tough spot.
Yeah, and again, like, I'll just keep on saying that I care more about what he is than what he isn't, but I think that these are all fair criticisms. LA Galaxy are level on points with Real Salt Lake and LAFC at the top of the Western Conference on 43, but they've played one more game than Real Salt Lake and two more games than LAFC, because the LAFC-Houston game got postponed this weekend due to inclement weather in Texas. But they are, again, in the mix for that top spot in the West, and that makes you in the mix for the Supporters Shield race. Again, like, they would be lower than some of the other teams that are on this list, but I think that it's a realistic shout to put them there. What they're going to do this summer,
being in the West too helps, right?
Yeah, and again, so like, I don't think that they really have to worry. Again, it's MLS, so a bad few weeks you could really fall back, but like, they don't have to worry about dropping out of the top four, which is what a lot of these CSOs and coaching staff say, that like, we want the home first round one playoff game, all that stuff, because Portland Timbers are in fifth on 33. That's 10 points behind them. So the good news about being in the West is that you have a little bit more leeway, and while they're challenging for first, there isn't a big floor to come below that. What the Galaxy are going to do this summer, I gave this update last night on MLS Countdown. Marco Reus, the Galaxy are still in active conversations to sign the German free agent after he left Borussia Dortmund. What I'm told is the Galaxy are definitely getting more confident as things go on. The feeling is that if Marco Reus was going to say, I'll just take a bigger payday because the Galaxy can't offer him more than Max Tam, that's, you know, a little bit north of 1.7 million. If he was just going to take the payday, which, you know, in the Middle East, Qatar and Saudi Arabia, the feeling is he would have taken one of those offers by now. So the more that this continues to go, the more confident the Galaxy are getting. They're not going to, like, obviously they're going to need an answer at some point soon. The transfer window opens on July 18th. But Marco Reus had a very long season. If he does sign with this team, it's not like they're going to say July 19th, all right, like, put you in the starting lineup. Like, they're going to manage it, particularly at first, give him a little bit of time to continue recovering, taking a little bit of time off. Borussia Dortmund got to the Champions League final. That was a little bit more than a month ago. And as long as he's 100% post-League's Cup, or maybe League's Cup knockout if they get there, like, that would be the ideal, and that is 1,000% in play right now, again, if Marco Reus does sign.
That'd be insane. And the fact that I think it fits a trend that we're seeing that LAFC have been able to take advantage of, which you're now saying, okay, well, let's steal a page if you're the Galaxy as well, which I guess they had it with Zlatan that first year where you're saying, okay, he's on TAM, I guess, but it's difficult. Miami as well, you know, like, that, there's a unique advantage to that location and to these clubs that they can take advantage of, where it's like, hey, you want to come to LA and you want to be a part of this thing. So the idea that they could add Reus, not for, you know, and fit within the cap and to add a player of that quality. The only question I have is, how would this all fit together?
I was going to ask you. What do you think? What would be your ideal first choice 11 in this team? How do you drop one of these players? And like, this, by the way, this kind of takes away Diego Fagundes, who was already kind of like, they made it work to put him in the starting 11 with Peck, Paintsill, Jovalich, and Pooch. Like, this would, like, he's already like one of the most overqualified, air quote, backups or rotation players in MLS, and like, that's, I think, churlish to even call it like that, but just in their best 11, he might not be in it. And that's before signing Marco Royce.
Yeah, it goes back to our conversation on the defensive part and the balance, because there have been times in the past where, you know, in past years, where the Galaxy look like they attack with five and defend with five. And there's two different teams. It's almost like a training exercise. And adding that, I mean, it's a great top five. You want to give me five to go play five aside with Marco Royce and Peck and Painsill and Pooch. And I mean,
not enough bite there. I take that back. Not enough bite there. Yeah, I mean, give me five Marky Delgados.
I'm just saying, you're going to have the ball. You have better keep the ball the entire match. And I mean, the Galaxy do a lot of that, but I don't quite see how that all fits. It's, I guess, a nice problem to have, and one you don't pass up if you can sign a player like that. But yeah, the rotation of I would assume it would have to be kind of a rotation where you go with the hot hand and whoever is in form. And yeah, but I mean, the idea of being able to make an addition like this would definitely, you have to do it.
Yeah, for sure. And again, particularly without using a DP spot, makes it all the more valuable. There is one other rumor that was around the Galaxy, Chilean goalkeeper Claudio Bravo. I'm told that there's just absolutely no truth to that. There's no interest, no whatever, right? Like, there's nothing there. So Marco Royce is the one to watch for this team this summer. As we move on to extra time, man of the match day. I think this one was easy, Kaywin. Diego Luna, a goal and three assists immediately after being left off the U.S. Olympic roster in Real Salt Lake's 5-2 win over Atlanta United. What a response from Diego Luna, Kaywin.
Yeah, I love it. And for me, you know, what I like best about him is the quality, of course, and everything that we see on the pitch. But I think the personality piece is really important. I think that's a big thing to say about this Real Salt Lake side in general, that, you know, they've kind of had that grit to it, that profile, the personality of Pablo that kind of goes throughout the team. But then they added this investment, this top end quality with Arango and all these pieces. But for Luna, it's like, it's pretty difficult, right? And he, I think he said all the right things after the match, as far as, you know, hey, well, you know, I'm really happy to be focusing on my club team and all that. But to miss out on a chance to go to the Olympics, it is a big one. And it's a once in a lifetime opportunity in most cases with the age requirements, and but to perform the way he did and to take that on, like that chip on the shoulder I think Pablo mentioned about him is a part of the way he plays, and you could see the way he responded to it, not in like an ugly way or anything like that, but just to get the best out of himself. And there's a part of me that's just like, I know that there's only 18 men on the roster that can go to the Olympics. It's a small roster, right? Mm-hmm. Which is competition for places. And you go through the list and you're saying, okay, well, Mihailovic is the overage player, as you reported, to go and be the number 10 for this team. And you say, okay, well, these are similar positions, and you've now sort of quote unquote invested more heavily with a more experienced player at the same position, and that drops off, and you need other players like McGlynn who offer something different. And you try to make an argument, but I just watched the way he plays and I'm saying, you don't want that guy on to be able to help in any way. Like, he's got to be on the team, that personality, for the same reason, to be able to find a moment to make a difference, whether from the start or off the bench. And so that's the disappointing part for me, is to not see him on that stage. Not to mention that when we got to see him in his moments with the full team, I understand it's January camp, he was one of the best players. Like, he jumped off the pitch and brought that personality that we see, that was like, I want to grab the game. And for young teams in a big tournament like that, that's hard to, you can't manufacture that. That's just something you either have or don't have. And but yeah, for Salt Lake, I mean, he started the season a little slow. I think that could have hurt him, where he wasn't, you know, in the best form early, and there was a little bit of a dip. And then as of late, though, I mean, he's just been flying as of late. It's been great.
Yeah, and so Pablo Mascherani, after the game, this was, again, the Olympic roster got announced Monday morning, and it's, you check it out on all social media accounts everywhere. I don't want to, you know, read off 20 names and make Kaywin take a nap and drone off. But so Pablo, this was before it was official. Pablo Mascherani, after the game, I had already reported it, so he was asked about it, and he kind of confirmed it then, and he was like, look, it's just poking the bear. He's a player that plays with a chip on his shoulder. Selfishly for me, we've got a top player that is going to be available for the next four games. So that's how they spun it. Like you said, Diego said that himself after the game. again, understanding the constraints, and it's difficult to pick these rosters, and it comes down to coaching staff, coaching decisions, and we all have our own opinions on soccer. That's why it's a beautiful game. I don't really see how you don't find room for a player. There is nobody else like him in this pool. He is very unique. You go back to that, again, the January camp. He was the only person that could go off script, it seemed like. For the U-20 World Cup, this was when I was really high on Diego Luna, but my one worry for him was, what's his long-term position? Like, how does this kind of turn into professional senior adult soccer, right? For like you need to be able to affect the game on both ways, and what's the best way to use him? He's playing as a false nine at that tournament, and he was really good. And now he's really settled in as this like inverted left winger. You could play him as a 10, and maybe in the right systems you could play him as a dual like free eight. I just think that this was an obvious selection, and again, it came down to coaching decisions. That's where it was. But back to Real Salt Lake again. They beat Atlanta 5-2. They avoided the trap game, and I'm going to read off a couple of Diego Luna stats as well. 5 goals, 12 assists. So even with slow start, he's got a ton of goal contributions. The league leaders in assists right now, Lucho Acosta, 17, Lionel Messi, 13, Diego Luna, 12. This is the company that this player is keeping. So for the interim, they get to still have this player. Meanwhile, Chicho Arango tied the RSL single-season goal record with 17, Alvaro Sabrio. It's crazy. He's leading the golden boot race. This Real Salt Lake team is so much fun.
Wait, this is so he tied the all-time goal record for
single season. Yeah,
with Saborio.
And
it's
on July.
It's July. It's July.
Damn. It's incredible. And by the way, I was reading the assist list. I didn't even notice this, so I went to go check where Diego Luna sat. Chicho Arango is fourth in MLS in assists with 11. This team is so much fun. Again, and behind him in the golden boot race, Benteke and Buanga each have 14 goals, tied in second. So it's Chicho Arango's award to lose.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And we're talking about investment and the way that, like, this race for the supporter shield. And Real Salt Lake, I love that they're the way that they've pushed their chips in. And you think of the players that they're not missing during this window, the way they're just running teams off the pitch. I think they can really have a say in this all the way down, which is why I'm so excited about this. Is I was talking to Bradley Wright Phillips about it, where, you know, three-time Supporter Shield winner himself, and we were saying it often comes down to two teams, which isn't always so interesting to me, where it's like, oh, is Philly or is it LAFC or is it Atlanta or is it Red Bull? And this year it's like there's a clear 5-6 teams that could realistically do this, and that's what it makes it much more interesting to me, where there's a short window leading towards Leagues Cup, and then there's that break where the Leagues Cup happens, and then it's another really quick sprint. So it's the reason we can have these types of conversations where it's like, this El Tráfico loss hurts the Galaxy, or I don't care if Lionel Messi's in town or not, Cincinnati, that win could potentially win them the Supporters Shield. And to be able to have these types of conversations in July amongst so many different teams makes this way more interesting to me.
Yeah, I completely agree on that front. And it's an arms race. We talk about all these teams, like the Galaxy are kind of on the periphery, or like, again, I still think they're in the mix, but not one of the top teams. They're talking about adding Marco Reus. LAFC, Columbus can add DPs. There's going to be a lot, like Cincinnati wants to add another DP, and they need to add another center back. For Real Salt Lake, they have a DP spot open. For me, what I've been told for their summer plans, they just transferred Fidel Barajas to Chivas for a deal north of $4 million, I was told. Part of this is that they want to take that $4 million immediately reinvested back in the first team. Now, I don't know exactly what their targets are or how much that will end up being, so maybe they don't spend exactly $4 million. Maybe they spend more. Who knows? But their plan is to use those funds to help bring in a senior player, probably another DP, to add to this team, because they know that this is a special team and they have a chance to challenge and win trophies, and they want to capitalize on that.
I love that. I love that.
Where would you use the DP spot, Cameron?
Maybe another winger. I don't know, honestly. I mean, it's right now, this team, I think, has all of the pieces already. I think they can make a push already, but maybe another winger potentially to come in and make a difference, or 10. I don't know. Where do you see it?
Yeah, that's kind of where I go back and forth of like, but like, I like having Chicho Arango in that kind of free role, and you don't want to take away from Carlos Gomez or Diego Luna. But like, and Matty Crooks is useful, super useful as that, like, that eight, that connector and stuff. Like, there is no obvious hole on this team. The central midfield duo is really strong, so it's not enviable in one way of like, crap, like where do we use this? What do we want to do? Or the other side of like, it can be the LAFC thing when they're just adding to strengths. Like when they signed Danny Bowanga to a DP deal, they didn't necessarily need another winger, but they was like, let's go get the best player that we can. So I like, it's a cop-out answer. I don't really know. I think that it would have to be a versatile attacker because Pablo Mascherani, he really likes changing the lineups and tweaking it a little bit. They need players who can play different roles and play different, like with different players so that they can keep rotating. So that if Lunas sits or Gomez sits, or if Julio comes in at center forward and Arango drops into more of that 10. So I know it's an easy one to say. If there's a Cucho Hernandez type player, like somebody who can play as like a 9.5, just like Arango can, like I think that'd be ideal. Or another player like Bowanga who can play as a wide player but scores a lot of goals. So I think that they need that more than maybe like a chance creator because of how good Chicho Arango has been in that. But for me, like again, it's easy to say that the best examples of the best players in MLS, go do that, go sign those players, right? So I'm like talking that. About the profiles as Anders is shredding me in the chat, fairly shredding me. But that's Real Salt Lake. Atlanta United also has a huge, crucial, pivotal summer ahead of them. Again, they lost 5-2 here to Real Salt Lake. They don't have a coach yet. They sold Yakumakis. They sold Almada. They're close to selling Caleb Wiley. And they have a ton of flexibility, a lot of money, a lot of ambition. Do you want me to give you kind of my understanding of where they're at, or do you want to go in cold and just talk, say what you would do?
No, I'm curious because everything from the outside looks like it is just dumping. Like it looks like a full,
Right?
Like there's a lot going out, and including the manager, and not a lot coming in. So I want to know, like, for me, the big question is this a one window, return to glory project, or is this a multiple window project? And right. How does this tie in with the player signings as well as the manager decision? And will Valentino, you know, be a part of those decisions right now? And how does this all sort of mechanically work? Because from what I know of Atlanta, I would not describe their supporters as particularly patient. Which makes sense.
Yeah, this is a win now team, and Garth Lagerwey, the club knows this. Like, Garth has been, he's somebody that went, like, he gave an interview on here with Weeby. Like, anytime that he kind of speaks, he's really good at being honest and breaking things down. And like, he was like, yeah, like we want to be able to develop like Caleb Wiley, which I'll get to in a second. But it's like he's like, we have, you know, we could have up to 70,000 fans in the building. Like, we need to, if we're developing, we also need to win. So we need to balance that at all times while winning is always the top priority. So for me, I think that they're going to try to do as much as they can this summer. What I'm like, obviously a DP10, DP9, those are obvious holes. And again, my understanding is that the plan is to fill those this summer. From what I'm hearing, I believe DP10 is the first priority because they have Tiare and Rios up top that can play there for now. But again, they want to sign both. I'm told the budget is very, very significant for each of those spots. Then some of the numbers that I heard, I was asking, I was like, oh, do you mean for both a DP9 and a 10? It was like, no. They each have their own budget.
That's
like
a good sign. That's what we want to hear, Tom.
Depending on, again, what, like, I don't want to give any numbers out because it could depend on if it's a higher transfer fee or a higher salary. My assumption is it's going to be a significant on both for both players. And Garth Lagerwey in prime players for DPs is what he's always done. Between Yakumakis, Almada, and then maybe Caleb Wiley, that's going to be upwards of 40 to 50 million in transfer revenue this summer for three excellent players. On Caleb Wiley, the club and Chelsea are continuing to talk. The negotiations are getting closer. There is no agreement yet, but talks are progressing. Sources around this deal are optimistic that something gets done, and I'm told that it could be in the region of like 10 million. So Chelsea are paying up. It would be a direct loan to Strasbourg immediately, so that's where he would be going to Ligue 1. But again, that's kind of where Atlanta United are at this summer. The head coach, two DPs that they want to spend a ton of money on. They've already signed another left back to come in with Caleb Wiley on his way out. But there's no shortage of interest and options.
All right. You got that. I can't wait to see what happens from this. But the last part is with the coach. Is there a timing involved in that? Do you know how quickly we might see or hear any news?
No, it's interesting. I haven't heard a ton on this. Again, Atlanta don't throw away seasons, or they don't want, like, they are still firmly like believing in this campaign. Obviously everything's fluid depending on, you know, running a if they had to do one of these three things, either a head coach, a DP10, or a DP9, just one of those is like a full-time like top priority. They got to do all three at once. So I haven't heard a ton about that in the moment. But again, my assumption is that they're working through the process to hopefully try to do it this summer. But again, I don't know that with 100% certainty.
Cool.
Beyond that, again, Real Salt Lake in the Supporters Shield race, so were the Columbus Crew. They beat Toronto 4-0. They were absolutely balling. That's four wins in a row during that time. 15 goals for, one goal against. The attacking trio of Cucho Hernandez, Diego Rossi, and Christian Ramirez are out of control right now. In the last four games, Ramirez has 3 goals, 3 assists. Rossi has 3 goals, 5 assists. And Cucho has 5 goals, 5 assists. And Columbus still have games at hand on Cincinnati, 2. And Inter Miami, 3. So they are absolutely in this race because they have games against LAFC, Cincy, and Miami still upcoming this season. So when you talk about games in hand, they control their own fate because they're playing the teams that are around them.
Yeah, it's wild to me that we're talking about the Columbus Crew in the Shield race. And not because, you know, they're not a great team. It's just the CONCACAF Champions Cup, what they put into that tournament. Yeah. And the way they were able to withstand that time and then still give yourself a chance to be able to take down the Shield with the way that this race has been even. And it's just incredible. And, you know, this team's getting stronger as the season goes. I think they have a real chance for Leagues Cup as well. But the fact that the system, the way that this team plays as well, is just so fluid, so dynamic, so many different pieces that can hurt you. I love that. I think it was second or third goal where Mo Farsi comes in, where Christian Ramirez drifts wide, and they just always fill in those positions.
Champagne football. That goal was my favorite of the weekend.
Yeah, but they just fill the lane so well for each other. They always have an understanding of where the next one is. Cucho drops deep. He can play as a 10. That little outside of the right football behind that was into Ramirez. It didn't end up a goal early in that match. I was just like, this guy's an impossible. Sometimes he's a left winger. He's a striker. He's a you know, scores off straight off the head off a corner kick. Like, he can do literally everything that you could ask of maybe 4 or 5 different positions, which is oftentimes, you know, when I think of players like that across MLS, they're more like midfielders or like Chouinier or some of these guys that can play a lot of different spots and do the little things that you don't notice. You don't generally get that from your designated player. Top goal scorer. Like, that part to me is wild to see from Cucho Hernandez.
It's incredible, and it's clearly infectious. I believe that Diego Rossi and Christian Ramirez have been like this their entire careers as well. But that's why this trio, for me, this has to be the starting trio. I know that they have about a billion options that can play an attack, and they have AZ Jackson coming in, and they didn't sign him to not play him, obviously. But for me, I think that this trio complements each other the best. You look at, again, the goal that you're talking about with Mo Farsi. Like, it was Christian Ramirez, a goal. Like, if he wanted to say, I want to stay in the middle and score as many goals as I can, it'd be like, great, score a bunch of goals. He's the one that's pulling wide. He's sending a cross into Rossi. And Rossi, instead of trying to go for goal 6 yards out, he sees Mo Farsi coming and he heads it back across. Like, DP forwards don't do this. Leading goal scorers don't do this. Like you said, everything that Cucho Hernandez does, you know, your club record signing, they don't do this. This is just such a fun team to watch. And again, I'm just going to reiterate it. This should be the starting trio in any big game going down the stretch for me.
Yeah, I agree. And they have a massive game this weekend at LAFC, a rematch, right? MLS Cup, this time in LA. So, you circle that one. I'm going to be on the road in Montreal, but I'm going to be keeping my eye on that one as well. Just like the idea of like that matchup happening again. I think LAFC are in a better place than they were in the past. Bogush has been, I think, 10 matches now with a goal contribution. Kai Kamara, shout out to Kai, the legend.
Legend.
And then also well-rested I don't know how well-rested, because you still got to fly to Houston, and my condolences for that. But to go back and now all eyes are going to be on this match. And MLS Cup, I was saying, it's like, generally not a beautiful game to watch. It's always competitive. The firepower is always there, like the best teams, but it's not always a beautiful match. And what I love, I mean, Columbus made it that way. And Wilfred Nancy, I think really kind of proved that you can play winning football that is also beautiful. And LAFC have adapted as well. I think Matt Doyle has done a good job pointing that out so far this season, just seeing how Torundolo and this group have really a couple different modalities to play with. And I'm interested to see how this one plays out, because will they kind of step forward and push the line against Columbus and see if they can break them down? Like, which approach do we see? Do we see more of a counterattack?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you kind of go at them? And I was talking to Gio Savarese in the studio, and he was saying at times he thinks teams just sit a little bit too far out, but if you step out, that's when they're really going to break that first line of pressure and then get out to the races with Columbus. So I'm really interested to see the tactical approach that LAFC take playing at home against this Columbus team, and how that one plays out. It's a massive match.
Yeah, and I love having these big games in July, and it's good that both of these teams will be relatively full strength, like rather than, like, again, with Miami and Cincy, there was no Messi, no Suarez, and that just happens over the course of the season, right? But it looks like, barring any bad news getting closer to the game, this is going to be as full strength, really, as they get. So that's super exciting. And with this Shield race, so the average, since 2011, the 34-game season, the average point total of a Shield winner is 62 points. That is 1.8 points per game. Right now, this season, we have five teams above that total, and the LA Galaxy are slightly under. So that's six teams playing at the average Shield winning pace. The record points total, the New England Revolution, 73 points. That point per game is 2.14. Cincinnati are currently surpassing that points per game total. So this is an extremely fun, potentially historic Shield race. I don't want to do the thing that happens sometimes in the Premier League where we talk about a three-team title race with, you know, 15 games left, and then all of a sudden, by you know, 3 weeks left, Manchester City's up by 9 points already. So yeah. I hope that it stays like this, and I have every reason to believe it's going to stay like this. But again, the Columbus Crew are definitely in this, and as you said, just with what they had to do for the CONCACAF Champions Cup, getting to the final, everything that comes, the strain that puts on the squad, the fact that they just won MLS Cup, I figured that Shield wouldn't be a priority, and that because of there's so many other kind of good teams towards the top, that it wouldn't really even be something we'd be talking about right now. But that's a credit to Wilfred Nancy and all the players in the squad.
Yeah, I do like the fact that it is becoming a little bit more predictable. Just like, I like the magic of not knowing who's going to win each match, and yeah, you know, that's always been a part of MLS. But you know, you do know now, like, LAFC are probably going to bring it, you know, or Cincinnati are gonna consistently, that consistent ability to just like take a team down, where Columbus, Toronto have been, I think, four matches lost in a row, and coming into lower.com, like, that was probably gonna end up that way, and it lived up to that. And I think that sort of predictability can be good for for MLS, and the fact that it's coming, I think, more across like that top six right now, it's still good. We still love the chaos, of course, but also to your point, you have to get in the top four seeds. Like, I don't think a team is going to go to MLS Cup without being a top four seed. And I've been on some teams that have maybe turned it on a little bit late, being like, okay, what time is it? All right, it's playoffs, let's go. But you're not going to be able to do that in MLS now, because we even see the teams that were in form that, you know, got hot late with Sporting Kansas City, or, you know, I think even Houston Dynamo did a good job, but then ultimately like ran up against LAFC, or you make a decent little run and turn around, and then you think you're in a good form, and then next thing you know, it's like, oh no, Columbus is waiting. Like, that's just the way it's going to go. So I think that it does add more stakes to this part to make sure. And for me, there's a clear top three in the West. That fourth position is pretty wide open from my perspective. Like, mm-hmm. Vancouver, Colorado, Seattle now, which is crazy to say. Anders is going to love that. But yeah, there's just like, there's that four spot is pretty wide open as far as a team. Portland, yeah, that can get into that position. And I think you need to if you really want to have a chance at going to a cup.
Yeah, so really quickly on Toronto, in their last 12 games, one win. I think the bottom's falling out here. John Herdman after the game said, as I've said to players, if we can't work on it, we've got to make signings. We've got to be ready to improve the squad. Everyone is running out of chances here. So Toronto FC might be a team that could shake things up this summer if they can find the room in the salary cap budget. Again, LAFC and Houston, like I said before, postponed, and LAFC play Columbus next weekend. Moving on, some signs of life from a few of these teams that were struggling down at the bottom. Seattle Sounders, 2-0 win over the New England Revolution. That's three straight wins for Seattle. That's 4 out of 5, up to 7th in the West, 3 points back and forth. Their last three games, home wins over Dallas, Chicago, New England, and those are games that if you want to be in that mix for the top four, like you said, Cameron, if you want to be a playoff team, those are three home games. You really got to get minimum 7 points, but you're expecting 9. Again, that's what every team should be looking at and thinking of. So it's not like they went to LAFC, Columbus, Cincy, and it's stuff like this, but you have to beat the teams you're supposed to beat. That's how you make the playoffs. That's how you improve your seeding. And are the Seattle Sounders back, Kalen Carr?
Yes. And you know, I think Jordan Morris is clearly back. They needed something more. I think when I watched Seattle earlier this year, it just looked like there was nothing really that dynamic to the team. There wasn't really that threat where they could just kind of change the game. And Jordan Morris, I think, now has 7 goals in his last 9 games. And then the idea now that they're going to get De La Vega back, which was really the part for me where I thought he was going to be the one that was going to freshen this group up a little bit. And we saw glimpses of it. I remember that first appearance off the bench at LAFC where he just like beats a guy one-on-one, and he just haven't really had that. And they only gave him a couple minutes, I think, in these last 2 games. They have to be pretty careful with him because it seems every time it sounds like he's coming back, he gets injured again. So, but the fact that now he's coming back into a team that at least has like a stable floor, they're in playoff position already, is a much better platform for him to come back. So I'm not going to say they're back where, you know, they're a top two team the way we've seen in years past, but they've given themselves a chance. And when you think of just how far down in the dumps they were, where people were talking Schmetzer out, is he going to keep his job and all that, like he stayed the course. And the piece that I loved as well is post game, they asked him kind of what's going on with the turnaround, and he said, we believed, like the word belief was a big part of it. And then he also gave the credit to the players. And I think so many times we see managers, I'm not going to name names, but maybe take the credit. Like, I knew that if I just had it this way. And it always drives me insane to hear that. And I think you get more from the manager when you pass it along to the players, and then the players want to give that back to you. But it hasn't been an easy season for them so far at all. So I give them credit for staying the course and kind of digging their way out of this.
All I know is Dom Kinnear would have never done that to you during your Houston Dynamo heyday.
I need some credit, Dom. No, he always passed it along.
I'm being told that the math was a little bit old, and Seattle are actually 6 points back of fourth place. Look, I'm gonna take the blame here. That's on me. I'm not throwing nobody on their bus. We're not doing anything. I got to be better. That's all I'll say on the matter. We're moving on. We're moving on to the next game. Orlando City 5-0 over DC United. Orlando, good run of form. Switched to a 4-2-3-1 in the last three games. Martin Ojeda coming in as the number 10. He's got goal contributions in all three of those games. Duncan McGuire starting as the lone striker over DP forward Luis Muriel. Has he beaten out another high-priced designated player? Kaywin, with Facundo Torres on the right, Ojeda back as the 10, and Duncan McGuire, who is leaving for the Olympics, but is Duncan McGuire as the 9, 4-2-3-1 with this setup? Is this the best formation? Is this what it has to be moving forward? Contracts be damned? DPs be damned?
Yeah, I'm always in favor of benching a DP. Like, I'm not going to miss an opportunity for that. I think the piece that I like the best is it allows Facundo Torres to play not in a primary chance creator position where he has to be ball dominant. He can kind of drift to that right flank, and then when he comes in and arrives, he's on his left foot, and he can help. Then they have some width overlapping. Cartagena came around. Beautiful ball in, Robin Johnson with a good finish. But yeah, and then Ojeda, I had questions, honestly. Like, he for me doesn't always have the work rate, the fitness to push, and I don't know if he makes a difference. But as of late in that position, and I think more than anything, not just with what he's bringing necessarily, which has been good, but what he allows the rest of the how this shift allows other players to play their best spots, as opposed to one piece breaks. Okay, we don't have this. How do we figure out these two strikers together? And it seems like Perea has been trying to figure that out all season and finally stuck on one that you're like, oh, this one actually works here. And it wasn't, you know, overly complicated as far as finding a solution.
Mm-hmm. So this is, again, like, I don't want to be dismissive or take anything away, but home at DC United, if you want to be a playoff team, this is a game you have to win. And giving them credit for winning the games that they're supposed to win, but this team has higher ambitions, and I don't know what if this changes the ceiling, but again, they are playing much better of late, and it's good to see, particularly again with Facundo Torres back on the right, the way that he's kind of looking like 2023 Facundo Torres. The next game that kind of could we call it a playoff elimination match? Probably not this early in the season, but anyway, Sporting Kansas City 3-2 win over FC Dallas. Dallas rotated with Open Cup coming up. San Jose. Sporting Kansas City are tied for the most points dropped from winning positions this season. They did not let that happen against Dallas. They have dropped 20 points from winning positions. Just if you're curious, San Jose is tied in first with 20 as well. DC United second with 19. Houston, surprisingly, with 17. Peter Vermes won his 200th MLS game. That's the third coach in league history to hit that, behind Bruce Arena and Ziggy Schmidt. Kalen, signs of life for Kansas City, or hey, you got to win sometimes? What is it?
Well, I want to say Memo Rodriguez, that shot, that strike, the angle behind the goal, I was like, oh my God, he just absolutely crushed that one. I've known Memo since he was very young in the academy, but to see him now, you know, thriving there. And then as you mentioned, that this team was desperate for when both teams are desperate for a win. The rotation presented an opportunity where they brought in Petr Musa off the bench. He looked really good when he did come in. Got rewarded, I think, now his 11th goal of the season. So that's been an amazing signing for them. But you could even see it tell down to the end of this match. Like, there was that scrap at the end where it was Areola threw the ball at the face of Bassong. And honestly, I was like, I don't really have a problem with the response. I thought that response was like, you have to be careful there in those positions, and he had to defend himself as well, because that was, for me, disrespectful. Men's league, Tom, what happens? What happens when that goes down?
Exactly that. And probably a lot more players run in, but I will say it was so hard for me to not make that the best thing I saw this match day, because I thought Anders was going to cut my mic and kick me out of the recording. But
he also was like pumping up the crowd on the way out, like he didn't take his shirt off, but
I was like, I can't pick who I relate to more. If somebody was jumping in front of me holding a throne in a men's league game, I'd probably throw it off their forehead. If somebody did that to me, I'd absolutely push them. I don't know which one I relate to more. There probably would have been a lot more words coming from me either side, but a beautiful, beautifully fun moment. Zoran Bassong sent off for that, I think it's fair, and Paul Areola got a yellow card for that.
I would say I've learned a lot about you, Tom, but I knew who you were before this podcast.
The next section here, a little transfer rumors if we need to change gears. Transfer news from me. Again, we've touched on a couple things before. Caleb Wiley, Marco Royce, but a few that we haven't hit yet. I'm going to start with Moise Bombito. As I said on Countdown last night, Bombito, Lyon and the Colorado Rapids continue to discuss a deal for Moise Bombito. Lyon had a bid rejected of around $4 million. Lyon could go up to around $5.5 million, sources have told me. And the Rapids say that's insufficient. Lyon have talked about maybe they could throw a younger player in as a swap to make up the difference in value, but nothing has come from that yet. The sides are still talking. Bombito is open to this Lyon move, wants the Lyon move, is obviously has ambition to continue to move up in his career, but the Rapid side of things are, we're in a strong position. He's still got a couple more years under contract. They believe that if their valuation is not met this summer, it absolutely will be at some point over the next 12 to 18 months, because they just believe that he's going to continue improving. He's only got, I think, north of between 30 and 40 club first team professional games. It's been an incredible rise. He's been awesome with the Canadian national team. He went from a super draft pick, afterthought, was starting to get minutes last year after Robin Fraser was let go by the Colorado Rapids, and this year, one of the best center backs in the league. So that's where things stand on Moise Bombito.
Yeah, I could see. I think for me, the trajectory that he's on is the exciting part, because as you mentioned, the lack of minutes, the lack of regular playing, and then now this big leap to playing internationally. And for me, he you know, even on the international level, he jumps off the page. And there is something different as far as perception when you perform at that platform, right? So I think the same thing is happening with Schaffelberg, where you're saying, oh, if you've been watching MLS, you could see this guy is like a difference maker. And from Bobito's perspective, like, I just did one of their matches this season, and I was like, had heard about him and watched, you know, clips and highlights, but seeing him in person live, you're like, this guy has everything. Like he has timing, tackles in the box. He can play with the ball at his feet, the pace, the ability to turn and go. Like, he did learn a little bit of a hard lesson against Solomon Rondon in that Venezuela match where
who amongst us has not?
Exactly. If you have been in this continent, like you will find out. But I think that was a perfect example of maybe where that next step is, where it's not just about you're in a race, right? He's always going to win that one, but you have to have that sort of cleverness to understand it's just going to give you a nudge to create that yard of space, and that's all that matters in that position. But to be able to learn that lesson on the international stage and then advance, and now going up against Argentina and Lionel Messi, I'm so hyped for that match as a, you know, quasi. I know David Goss stamped my passport to allow me to go to Canada so much this season. But yeah, I could see the patience on maybe being, you know, patient to wait, because I agree that fee, if you are going to move him on, because he's such an important piece for Colorado as well, too, and their ambitions this season.
Yeah, so a couple more notes on this. Like, their view is that, like, if he's being priced as an up-and-coming player or whatever, like, again, just because of the total first-team matches, they understand that, but they think that, like, okay, in a year, that won't be the perception. Teams will be coming in and being like, okay, we're going to put him straight into it. Like, Leon wants to put him straight in the first team, but, like, Colorado is saying that you have to pay starter money for this. Like, that's their feeling. And again, they want to reward Bombito with a new contract if indeed that nothing comes of this. Not sure where him and his representation are. I don't know if they would entertain a new deal because of if they want this move. But again, this is all fluid. There's still a lot going on there, and we'll see. It's a long summer left. Next up, Portland have a busy summer ahead of them. They just beat Nashville 4-1. They will add a significant central midfielder, I'm told. Maybe, probably a designated player with the view of helping to continue to improve and fix their defense. They only have one loss in the last nine. They got a couple shutouts around along the way, but they still know that they need to improve the defense. That is the top priority this summer. That means the central midfielder is definitely going to leave, right? The obvious one is Eric Williamson rather than Paredes. Clubs around the league know that Eric Williamson is available, I'm told, and the Portland Timbers are going to be open to moving him because he has value and he would add allocation money. And again, it doesn't serve anybody to bring in potentially a DP central midfielder and put Williamson further away, or just, hey, you can rotate in for a Vander once in a while, right? Like, it doesn't make sense for all parties. There's a bunch of interest around the league. Nothing that's too advanced or too serious right now. I'm sure that this is going to heat up over the next 2 weeks. It is absolutely going to heat up, particularly whenever Portland get closer to bringing in a DP central midfielder, if that's where they go. But that's where it is right now. Kalen, where would you like to see Eric Williamson end up?
It's a good question. I mean, because I actually think he could fit on a ton of teams. When you think of, like, the position he plays, what he brings, Vancouver, I know it's a Cascadia rival, but Vancouver is interesting to me. The way that Sartini plays sometimes has, like, some fluidity to those midfield positions where they start inside and move wide at times, and helping in that kind of build out phase. I could see him just bursting through the middle as well up there. But Columbus Crew, I mean, that would be amazing to see. I don't think nobody already touches the ball when you play against Columbus already, and you add him to the mix, but I don't know if that would be a fit. Like, I don't know what their cap space situation is, but I would love to see him be on a really, I like the, I'm looking at teams where it's a good team already or a great team, and how does he take them even further down that way? And Vancouver one stood out to me as a potential. I think Minnesota could work, Dallas for sure. I mean, I would love to see him in Houston, the way they play with the ball.
I would too. I would like that a lot.
There's a number of teams that I think would be a perfect fit, or that he would be great for.
Yeah, and again, to kind of shift it back to Portland a little bit, like, they're in a great run of form. They're really kind of coming together. That attack looks incredible around Evander. Jonathan Rodriguez has been an awesome signing. Felipe Mora has been probably the most fit he's been in a few years, like, in terms of not, like, ability to run, but just not being injured, which has been great. And watching him have a run of form, Santi Moreno on right, like, this is a really complimentary attack. In the winter, when they signed Rodriguez, or when they're going through the process to sign Rodriguez, their, like, initial plan was, like, we'll probably use that other DP spot in attack. And I think just the more data that they've gotten under Phil Neville and what this team needs and more like what they don't need. They don't need another like star attacker. So I think that that's kind of informed where the search has gone and what this decision is going to be. So Portland Timbers are looking good. All right, before we get out of here, let's do some quick hits. San Jose Earthquakes, 1-0 over Chicago Fire. Their first clean sheet of the season. Well done, San Jose. Colorado Rapids, 4-1 over St. Louis. Darren Yappe scores, and they have a dogpile. Kane, you love that, right?
I saw Chris Armas jumping in there, too. I was like,
I loved it.
Armas showing his pace coming down the sideline. That was incredible. And Yappe had, like, he's been so unlucky. I mean, yeah. He's had a couple called off, I remember early on, even last year, and hit the post a number of times. So you could see, at first I was like, oh, this is literally piling on because it was 4 at the point. But then I was like, oh no, who scored? Okay, it was Yappe. And I love that for a team when like the vibes are good and you're able to get that guy off the mark. I mean, even just the way he celebrated, you could feel the weight coming off him. So yeah, that was a moment. Yeah, it was up there in the race for me of I picked the Peck nutmeg because, you know, I chose violence, but this was a really good story.
One more note on Colorado. Cole Bassett did not make the Olympic team. Cole Bassett was shocked. Colorado Rapids were shocked. Colorado Rapids were disappointed for the player, but immediately pivoted, again, just like Real Salt Lake, of this is great. We get to keep a key starter for the next, whatever, few weeks, however long that they would have been gone for the Olympics. And guess what? He, just like Diego Luna, had an awesome game in that first game off. Again, 4-1 win over St. Louis. Leagues Cup Bracket Challenge details. The 2024 Leagues Cup Bracket Challenge presented by Coors Light is live. Log on to leaguescup.com/bracketchallenge and sign up to make your picks. It is completely free to play, and you can compete for the grand prize of $10,000 plus other cash prizes for the top 15 finishers. You can fill out your bracket anytime between now and when the group stage kicks off on July 26th. Kalen, what's your way too early pick for champion of Leagues Cup?
I'm going with Messi. I'm going with Messi. Or Miami.
Just Team Messi. Just Miami. Team Messi.
Okay. Miami. Sorry.
I just had to clarify that there.
Yeah. No. let's not overcomplicate things, right? Defending champions, everyone will be back, the best team. Yeah, I think they're going to be up for it. I think they're going to want to defend that title. I think when the spotlight comes, we know how they operate. It's been really fun doing the Supporter Shield chat. I'm dived into that race. I'm becoming a Supporter Shield truther in honor of Matt Doyle.
Wow.
I don't know what's happening to me, but ultimately, when it comes down to it in knockout tournaments, I'm not going against Messi. So, Tom, if you got another direction, please convince me. But I'm on my early prediction. Yeah, I'm sticking with the GOAT. I'm sticking with my league.
I need to point out a play-by-play for the audience who obviously are only listening to this. When Kalen used the word, I'm kind of becoming a Supporter Shield truther, he literally had his eyes closed and was rubbing his forehead as if he had a massive migraine. That's how much it pained him to say that, so you know it's real. Yeah. For me, look, man, I'm leaning towards the Liga MX's giant, and I know that's not a fair answer to just be like, oh, any one of the 5 best teams in Mexico? So give me Monterrey and Brandon Vasquez. What I would love most for the narrative, or would probably be maybe the funniest, Yorgos Yakamaki's leading Cruz Azul to winning this tournament. Imagine the content, the interviews, everything else that would come out of it.
I do like the MLS players going to Liga MX, coming back, Reynoso, Frankie Amaya playing at Cincinnati again. I don't know how this happens, but I'd like to architect all of these storylines.
Put our thumb on the scale for we get to pick the group stage matches. Let us be the sporting czars and sort it all out. So we just go for the content, go for the narrative, and go for the vibes. But Kalen, think that'll do it for us. Good fun show. Always great seeing your face and listening to your voice. Everyone, go watch Kalen on MLS Wrap-Up if you have not caught that yet, particularly from those late games on Sunday night. Hope everybody had a wonderful holiday weekend. Go check out SoccerWise with me and David Goss. Got to sneak that one in right there. And we'll talk to you soon.